10:17. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. Didn't stay up late to watch or hear the results of the South Carolina and Nevada votes last night, primaries and caucuses. Donald Trump a winner last night. Hillary Clinton a winner last night. Jeb Bush out of the race. What does it all mean? For that, we turn to our pal Paul Green, who is the director of the Institute of Politics, Roosevelt University. Professor Paul, how are you this morning?
Well, a little tired, Dean. It was a rough night for me last night. You had to stay up late. You know, these campaigns are getting, you know, very long. I'm getting ready, I think, for 2022, just in case.
What do you mean? You have to, like, would you stay up till like 9 o'clock last night? Something like that?
Which would be, Saturday Night is Saturday Night Live. I didn't even watch that last night, Dean. I was riveted to the repeating statements by all the people talking, just like the people listening to me are going to hear this all before. Okay. But I have a different, one little twist different. But
well,
other than that, yeah, you got a lot of air to fill. Not that you don't. You do it all original, but some of these cable news is just kept repeating and repeating and repeating, and it's worth it that you finally get the feeling of what's really going on.
Well, it is starting to get interesting, that's for sure. Let's start off with Jeb Bush, though, because I think that's pretty significant. The man who was considered to be the front runner for the Republicans until Donald Trump got in the game and just started beating up on Jeb Bush, something from which the former Florida governor just could not recover.
Yeah, I think he'll be at that Aurora Theater. What's it, Someone Sings the Blues or something? He may be there performing. He just was, I think the phrase is, he was just a bad fit. I mean, he looked scholarly. He had we're so petty in our politics that one of his advisors told him he should get contacts and take off his glasses because he looked too serious. I mean, this is how we select a president. It's silly. He should have demanded a written exam for the office. But given the fact of what works now and what people want to hear, even if it doesn't necessarily have any relevance or any possibility of ever happening, it's the sound, not the substance. And Donald Trump and Mr. Cruz, Ted Cruz, have that ability. And Marco Rubio is now coming in as the moderate in that group. So it's a no one could have predicted this last year, and I think anyone who said they knew saw this coming would just simply be puffing.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting, isn't it, though? Because, I mean, Jeb Bush was the presumed candidate for a pretty long time, had all of the money behind him, all of the support, all of the things that everyone says you need in order to win. In the end, it turned out all the super PAC money in the world didn't make any difference. All the connections in the world didn't make any difference. Appearances by Barbara Bush and George W. Bush didn't make any difference. Is it just this Donald Trump steamroller that's changing the whole landscape of the Republican Party?
There's no doubt about it. He is the most unique candidate we've had in a long time. Someone tried to argue that Ross Perot, he's sort of a Ross Perot, but Ross Perot never ran in a party for a party nomination. Ross Perot was an independent. Donald Trump has never run as a Republican, never run for anything, so he certainly never run as a Republican. And by the way, the same thing's happening in the Democratic Party. You have a guy challenging Hillary Clinton who's never run as a Democrat. He's a socialist. So the times have changed, and people are now interested in what could possibly be, gain without much pain, and they're both viable candidates. And Mr. Trump, I don't want to keep repeating myself, but when we had him at the City Club in June after he announced, and people were laughing at us, and I made the comment afterwards, this guy's really smart. May not know a lot about government, but he's really smart. It's called coming through. Everyone's afraid of him to take him on because the counterattack is so savage. And it'll be really a lot, not fun, it would be fun if it gets down to one or two people where they can go really at each other. My goodness, it'll be like the fights of the century. I mean, do they still make Gillette razors? I don't know. But if they do, they could be like the old days on Friday night fights. Gillette presents the boxing matches. Because it's going to be a slugfest.
But don't you wish that there was more talk about how, I mean, everyone's got their stump speech. Everyone is repeating their stump speech. Everyone is, pandering to their core audience. I mean, pandering like crazy. I'm talking about everybody. Shouldn't we, as the voters, shouldn't we be demanding to know more than just empty promises? Because it sure seems like there's a lot of empty promises. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, sure. And don't you worry, I'm going to take care of this and that. But nobody's talking about how any of this is going to get done.
You know, the smart-ass answer, especially coming from me, which would not surprise any listener, is that look at the ratings of C-SPAN, where they have serious discussion of the issues and nuanced debates. No, they want the fire and the fury, and they want the put-downs, and they want the one-liners. It's just,
sad.
For someone like myself, it's really disagreeable, but that's what the game is. You got to play by the game. I mean, the game decides what the rules are, and the game right now is to be tough and to be on the extreme in both parties.
So how do you think this week will go for Trump, Cruz, Rubio, I guess, right?
They have the Nevada caucus, which, by the way, is sort of like batting practice, spring training. You know, that'll be the last batting practice for the Republicans. And on March 1st, you have all the southern states coming in and a few other states, real delegates at stake. And that'll be the big one. But I think Trump will probably win in Nevada. But the number of delegates split will be somewhat, minimized. One big point that Trump did last night was he swept all of the delegates from South Carolina. That's the biggest story. There's, in the Democratic Party, Hillary Clinton won in Nevada, but the split on delegates.
Split the delegates with Bernie pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and the Democrats believe in proportionality, which means that you really have to expect a long fight if you have the money, and both of them will have the money. But on the Republican side, which I have to admit is more interesting, mainly because of Mr. Trump, if he keeps winning and on March 1st he gets, a sizable chunk, even though they have winner-take-all after March 15th, he may have a lead so big that it will be impossible for anyone to overtake him. Remember, the game is delegates. It's not necessarily winning states. It's winning delegates. And so he's in the catbird seat, and if you're going to stop Donald Trump, it's got to happen much sooner than people, you can't wait him out any longer. They have to find a way to stop him, and the so-called Republican establishment, which may not even exist anymore, if they get together, probably in a back room without taking names, because if he's the nominee, those folks are, not necessarily going to be the establishment any longer. They have to find out how in the heck you stop a guy who's broke every rules, including dealing with the Pope. I mean, what's left for him to take the wrong side of an issue and come out ahead? Nobody has ever run for president making these kinds of alleged mistakes and coming out on top. It's just remarkable. It's amazing. It's the equivalent of Columbus discovering the New World. I'll stop right there. But
it is pretty amazing. It's nobody would have predicted that this would have gone this long. I'm not sure what it says about voters. I'm not sure what it says about the climate. The discontent that people feel that. Somebody who is, speaking their language but hasn't really said in any way how he's going to do some of the things that he said. I mean, in a way, does it remind you of Governor Rauner running for governor in Illinois, where he also said, I'm a successful businessman, I know how to run everything. And, we've gotten zero done in Illinois since Governor Rauner has taken over.
That's a whole different issue.
For a variety of reasons, but I'm just saying that, nobody ever said, Bruce Rauner, how are you going to do the things that you say you want to do?
Reality is just becoming secondary. And, you got to have a catchphrase. Bruce Rauner is turn around. I think there's a song called Turn Around that was out there. I can't remember
turn
now.
Around,
you know,
look at me from.
Yeah, I mean, but it's just words. They don't mean anything. Wow. A serious discussion. It'll be interesting. Let me just go back to President. It'll be interesting if Mr. Kasich, who's the last governor standing, who has any government executive experience, how he withstands the next 3 weeks, because he basically is waiting for the Midwestern states, like Illinois, like Ohio, like Michigan, where maybe his kind of experience may be a help, not a hurt. But he has to stand that way. And remember, I think I said it on your program last week, in politics, for running for the nomination, it's the three M's, money, media, and momentum. And right now, Mr. Trump has all of those, and Mrs. Clinton has two of those, but the money factor is really kind of even, so that's going to go on. But Mr. Trump right now looks like a charging fullback going through the line and everyone just falling out of the way.
Yeah. Speaking of Secretary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, what was your take on how it played out last night in Nevada for them?
Well, being an old timer, unlike you.
Nevada. I learned last night from watching CNN and having them repeat it over and over. I'd been saying Nevada incorrectly all my life.
And how do you say it?
Now I'm saying Nevada instead of Nevada.
Dean, this is the problem with this country right now.
This is what I learned on
Nevada.
This is what I learned on watching CNN last night that I'd been saying that wrong.
Yeah, and I can spell CNN, by the way.
And those people say Illinois, so we're even, I guess.
Yeah, well, enough of that. She won, and the only thing that, being an old-timer like myself, I kind of like the fact that now they're beginning to realize that Senator Harry Reid, with all the media out there and all this fire and fury, made some phone calls to union leaders, and that very well may be the reason she has a 6-point victory. And I'm sure right now Richard J. Daley is up there smiling and says, well, they may be changing the game, but the old system occasionally still works.
And explain in what way, that they called in the union members?
The union, he called the union leaders and told them to get off their duff and come out to support Hillary Clinton. No commercials. Whatever persuasive powers Mr. Reid had, I'm not going there. There's all kinds of, you know, his background, allegedly a lot of things that may not be sweet and pure. Whatever it was, he put the word out, and they responded, these people, the culinary workers. You know, it's most of the voters are in Clark County, Las Vegas, and you have a lot of people working in service unions. I mean, obviously the hotels and all that other kind of stuff.
Right.
So he just put the word out there, and that could be one of the reasons that she won. The other thing, of course, is that she's been organizing that thing for 5 or 6 months. And she learned in 08 that ground game in these caucus states is everything. And because that's where Obama beat her, it was with the caucus states, not with the primary states. So that was also a factor. But this is a battle. I mean, this is a 15-rounder. We're only in round three with Clinton and Sanders. And though she does have the edge coming up with these South Carolina and then those big states, but given the proportionality of how the Democrats split the votes up, he's going to win delegates in every state. And that'll be something that he can keep going and going and going. And if he doesn't get the nomination, he will have a huge presence at the convention in Philadelphia. And for the first time in a long time, there even may be a fight over the platform, which, you know, normally hasn't taken place in recent years because no one really cares. But that could happen. So it's just going to be an ongoing battle, whereas on the Republican side, as I said before, Mr. Trump can close this out much sooner.
We have a text here, Paul, that says, Dean, thank you for having Paul Green. So great to hear him on the air.
I'm sure it's not a relative. I thank the person very much. I keep getting those emails, and, you know, it makes you feel good, but
I was just going to compliment you on, you know, be able to comment on the air on politics and also text at the same time.
Pretty impressive, huh? Well, yeah. Since I've been doing it on this station since 1983, I probably have a few fans out there. But, yeah, that's nice. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you certainly have a fan in me. I love having you on.
Well, you know, this is all a part of my scheme to be on your program the day of the Oscars.
I know you want to talk about movies.
Yeah, I want to talk about movies. And, you know, I said this on one of the shows, and I don't remember anymore, this is sort of the Bernie Sanders campaign is sort of like a Frank Capra movie. It's A Wonderful Life, and, you know, the angels are going to come down and have their wings and all that stuff. There's a study out now, and this is serious, that all these people are promising, per your point, all these things that are going to cost trillions of dollars, but way out ahead of them all is Senator Sanders, who may add up to $30 trillion to the government spending in the next 10 years if he becomes president.
Yeah,
none of it's going to happen, but those are the kind of promises you make where everything is free.
That's what's so frustrating. That's what is so – I was yelling at the TV listening to – all of the speeches last night yelling, how are you going to get this done, to everybody, not just one side. It's, you know, making all these promises just is so seems so empty to me without explaining how it's going to get done.
Well, living in Chicago, where we have real financial problems, public schools, real financial problems. God only knows the state of Illinois has financial problems. We may be more attuned to these kinds of empty promises than people in other parts of the country, because we're in such desperate financial shape that all the other issues, including some of the horrific stuff dealing with the shootings and all that, nothing could change unless you have money to change it. And when you make these promises nationally, where you have all of this trillions, I'm 18, 19 trillion, I can't, the debt that we have, government is so far behind, it's just, is it endless? Are we just going to keep going into debt? I just don't know how we turn it around, because there are people, a lot of people are hurting, and they're looking to the government to solve their problems. And
government doesn't
have the money.
Oh, boy. Professor Paul Green, always great to talk to you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dean.
There's Professor Paul, director of the Institute for Politics, Roosevelt University. Update the news in the week in theater next on WGN.
But the people of Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina have spoken, and I really respect their decision. So tonight, I am suspending my campaign.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, man. I congratulate my competitors that are remaining on the island on their success for a race that has been hard fought, just as the contest for the presidency should be, because it is a tough job. In this campaign, I have stood my ground, refusing to bend to the political winds. We put forward detailed, innovative conservative plans to address the mounting challenges that we face, because despite what you might have heard, ideas matter. Policy matters.
An emotional Jeb Bush getting out of the presidential race last night following the South Carolina primary. Considered once the front runner in the Republican nomination process. WGN-TV political analyst Paul Lisnick joins us on the phone line. Paul, good morning. And what went wrong for Jeb Bush?
Good morning, Dean. Well, I'm not sure anything ever went right for him. I had said weeks ago on our air that I thought his days were numbered. I think the problem is the Bush name. From day one, there was this, will there be Clinton versus Bush again? And people didn't want that. You still may get Clinton. But I just think at this time in this place, the name Bush was not going to do it.
Wasn't it just that Donald Trump...
By the way, he certainly had the money, I should say. He had the money.
He had everything that they say that you need. All the money, all the right connections, the super PACs. I mean, everything should have gone his way. And then what it seems to me is that Donald Trump got into the race and decided to eviscerate him. I mean, isn't that really what took all the wind out of his sails?
I think that's a big part of it. I think Bush got in on June 15th. Trump came in the next day on June 16th. And from day one, he's going out. You know, as soon as he started calling him the low-energy candidate who had nothing, that just stuck. And Bush could never break out of it. It could never fight back sufficiently.
So talk about some of the results last night. Donald Trump, a big winner. It was Marco Rubio barely in second place over Ted Cruz last night. Was that a surprise to you?
No, the results weren't. Although I have to say, if you didn't know the results and you were watching these speeches, it seemed like one of those, you know, kid groups where everybody gets a trophy. there are no losers here because both Rubio and Cruz gave speeches as though they won it.
Yeah.
Well, they both lost handily to Donald Trump. What they're really doing is fighting out for that second place. The thing is, Cruz's battle is really with Trump because they're going for the same kind of audience. Rubio, although he's fighting Cruz, he's really more of the establishment candidate now. But in all three of them, you have incredibly conservative candidates, which is why John Kasich, not dropping out yet, he's kind of waiting to get into the Midwest where he thinks he can have a bit of a comeback. But as you look at the numbers, Carson it will probably be the next to go. And John Kasich, unless he triggers something, will be shortly after that.
Where things will be a little more moderate in the Midwest for John Kasich.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, listen, the Republicans ever since 1964 with Goldwater have always nominated essentially a moderate. Now, there's clearly a different tone going on in this country right now. There's something very different happening. But nevertheless, you can't pull the plug completely on saying that, you know, you got to knock out every moderate. Kasich is the only moderate left in the race.
Well, were you surprised that Ted Cruz did not do better with evangelicals in South Carolina?
Yes, I mean, look, strong evangelical group there. He should have been a strong second, if not winning it. Of course, he was spinning that last night and this morning. The spin everybody has now is, well, if you take Donald Trump out of it, I'm doing great. Well, you can't take Donald Trump out of it because he's not going anywhere. Now, why Donald Trump is playing so well with evangelicals after this week of taking a – who takes on the Pope? You know, and
wins and wins
and wins. I mean, he just, there is nothing. They used to talk about Reagan being, you know, the Teflon president, Teflon candidate. I'll tell you what, nobody is comparing to Trump when it comes to being Teflon.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Where do you think that Jeb Bush's supporters might go now?
You know, and it's going to probably take a little bit of a while. It's hard to see. Obviously, with the battle Bush had with Trump, with Cruz, it's hard to see him going that way. Rubio Kasich is probably the direction, and that's why it's too early, because until Kasich sees whether or not he gets any traction, you have to put your money on them shifting over to Rubio. But, of course, with the strong battle, Dean, you had between Rubio and Bush going after each other, remember, they had a mentor-mentee relationship that certainly disintegrated. I think at some point Jeb Bush has to kind of wake up, and if Kasich is out, he has pretty much no choice but to go in Rubio's camp.
It was very interesting to see Marco Rubio's very cordial comments about Jeb Bush during his victory speech, one of the many victory speeches that we heard last night.
Right.
He spoke very fondly of Jeb Bush, as did Ted Cruz. Very interesting to me that Donald Trump said nothing about Jeb Bush in his speech, and Jeb Bush in his concession speech didn't say Donald Trump's name, but certainly alluded to him and saying, you know, that this needs to be more about policies that we haven't heard enough of. Clearly, he was talking about Donald Trump.
Well, and you raise a good point, which is, you know, sometimes you don't have to mention names to know exactly who these people are talking about. So nobody has to mention Donald Trump's name. You know when they refer to him. I will say that you're right. Trump didn't mention Bush last night. He did this morning in a very, you know, complimentary way. Of course, listen, when somebody's out of the race, why is there any need to start to continue to take them down? So love returns to the air as soon as somebody takes himself out of the race, and for good reason. They all hope to get that endorsement down the line.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Democratic side, in which Hillary Clinton takes a win, you know, not overwhelming win, but a win still from Bernie Sanders.
You know, it's enough of a win to actually move the momentum in that race. And so had Bernie won last night, by the way, Hillary would have been in deep, deep trouble. Now, I have always contended she will ultimately get the nomination on the Democratic side. And Bernie supporters in my life often say, you still think that? You still think that? And the answer is, yeah, I do. Last night could have been a bit of a game changer, but it wasn't. And so Hillary now showed she beat him in the African-American vote like 70-20. So absolutely took him to town on the African-American vote. The Hispanic vote is still up to play. Both are claiming they did well with it. It turns out Sanders did well with the Hispanic vote. So, you know, Super Tuesday, which they call the SEC primary Southeastern Conference, that's probably going to make the day, except, remember, on the Democratic side, each of them can split delegates from each state. There's no winner take all. So Bernie can keep this thing going for quite a while. He's got money coming in. Don't expect a quick resolution on the Democratic side, though I still believe ultimately Hillary, as of last night, shows she will get it.
So even if Hillary winds up being dominant with votes on Super Tuesday, delegate-wise, it still could be quite the dogfight between the two.
Oh, yeah, but you have to remember superdelegates. So you're right. Delegate-wise, they seem to be splitting as they – even last night, I mean, they sort of split the delegates. She only got a few more than Sanders did, but she's got the superdelegates lined up around the country. For listeners who don't know what a superdelegate is – on the Democratic side, all these states have elected officials, and they're all superdelegates. So for us, Tony Preckwinkle, Rahm Emanuel, all these elected officials are called superdelegates, meaning they don't have to be pledged to anybody, but they get a vote at convention time. And Hillary has lined up the support. I think some of the current numbers, it's like about 250 for her versus about 19 for Bernie Sanders. So even though the delegates may keep them close as these election contests go on from week to week, when it comes time to convention superdelegate time, she blows them away.
So what's going to come next now? Is it going to be a flip-flop with South Carolina and Nevada, with the Democrats in South Carolina, Republicans in Nevada now this week?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm not quite sure, you know, I mean, their own internal reasons for separating them this way. But, yeah, Tuesday is Nevada for the Republicans. So we'll watch them next week. Democrats move on to South Carolina. So, yeah, it's just a flip-flop for them. Those are the state's choices to do it. But all eyes, I think, are really on March 1st. That's Super Tuesday. That's that what's called the SEC primary. You've got, you know, so many states in the South and East, which will be really interesting, Dean, because the South, all the evangelicals, that's where Cruz either has to break out or he's done.
And all eyes will be on WGN-TV Morning News to watch more of your analysis tomorrow, Paul, if that's all right with you.
Starting at 7 a.m., I hope so. Thank you, Dean.
Beautiful. Paul Lisnick, WGN-TV political analyst.